Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome to Straight Talk by Stan Macklin, along with co-host Bianca Forbes. Well, there was the cut by Michael Jackson, and definitely it's not black or white. We're supposed to be human beings. We're going to be talking today about there's a recent NBC WSJ poll that's come out. I know some people have problems with polls, but they're just an indicator. It's a monitor, just a way of helping us to tabulate how people think. But this American poll came out that Americans are pessimistic on race relations. And that's what we're going to be talking today about, race relations, because this is something that we need to talk about in light of the fact of America's original sin that seems to be swept under the carpet. Nobody wants to really talk about or deal with, just continue to build on top of this infrastructure. And all it does is just breeds and produces like-minded supremacist different ideology that is coming to surface in the political, corporate, religious, educational, and secular spheres of society. And unless we take a stand that we're going to be and develop the anti-racist racism skills, then we'll continue in a systemic and overt fashion of being perpetuators of this disease. It is a disease, and it is something that seems like it's just not going to go away. And even to the extent that many people have died trying to resolve this here. But let's get right into it in this here poll that came out on September the 21st of this year. And it's definitely merited some talking about. And so I'm glad that we were able to discuss it on the program today. But it talks about that 7 in 10 Americans view race relations in the United States as poor, nearly matching the record high, according to a new poll from the NBC News and the Wall Street Journal. In the wake of a white nationalist demonstration in Charlottesville, Virginia, in August that ended in the deaths of a peaceful protester, 20% of the public, including 24% of whites and 40% of African Americans, say that race relations are bad. That's not good. With another 42% of all respondents calling them fairly bad. Well, all this is open for discussion, but just 20% of Americans overall call race relations very or fairly good. And in general, the question was asked, what do you think of race relations in the United States? And this was done. And last year, amid unrest after the deaths of several unarmed African-American men at the hands of law enforcement officers, and this is still going on. As a matter of fact, as I'm sharing this program with you today, one of my relatives was violently, who happened to be mentally ill, gunned down by execution in my hometown concerning this situation here. But anyway, a slightly higher share of Americans, 74%, called race relations either fairly or very bad. And as we further think about this here, they went on to talk about, do you think race relationships in the U.S. are totally good or totally bad. And to your amaze, a lot of people just said that it's totally bad. 74% figures mark the lowest point in the perceptions of race relations in the history of the NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, which dates to the divisive O.J. Simpson trial and verdict in the 1990s. The bleak outlook is a far cry from the optimism about race relations expressed after President Barack Obama's election as the nation's first black president. Shortly before Obama's inauguration in 2009, a record 77% of Americans offered a positive assessment on race relationships, while just 21% disagreed. They thought that we had turned the corner. We thought that Americans had come to grips with its racism. Well, while that confidence persisted during Obama's first term as president, it has eroded sharply to just 52%, very significantly, by the end of July 2013, the same month that George Zimmerman was found not guilty in the fatal 2012 shooting of Trayvon Martin, an unarmed black teenager in Sanford, Florida. Republicans and Democrats are less pessimistic about race relations than Democrats. Although majorities of all three groups have given a poor assessment of the current state of affairs, about two-thirds of both Republicans and Democrats call the race relations as bad, unacceptable, while 8 in 10 Democrats say the same. Men also have a slightly sunnier view. Just 20% of women, but 33% of men give a positive assessment of how the U.S. is grappling with race relationships. And this negative 70% of Americans that have a negative view on race relationships. Let's take a listen about this.
American view on race relations. They feel like it's in a bad place, 70%, and it's across the board, 69% among whites, 77% among African Americans, 67% among Hispanics. On President Trump's handling of the race issue, approved 25%, disapproved 52%. On Charlottesville, approved 20%, his handling of Charlottesville, 66% disapproved. None of these numbers surprising, Alfonso. But the question is, is the president need to be? Is he going to do something about it?
Look, I think the President of the United States has to bring the nation together, right? And I think this is a reflection of the polarization that we're seeing in politics today in America. And I think you have on this, I would agree with the President that you have, you know, people on both sides of the left and the right trying to use racial confrontation to mobilize their base. I don't think clearly that Donald Trump did a good job in easing the tension, after the Charlottesville event. But I don't think President Obama did either. I mean, when President Obama kept saying, and then Hillary Clinton, that our criminal system is systematically, there's systematic discrimination in our criminal system, I don't think that helped ease the tension. So, sadly, I think it's a reflection of a polarized environment. I think we need leaders from both parties that can raise to the level and say, look, you know, we need to unite the country.
You know, Anita, I go back to something Eric Holder said when he said, you know, we never have had this conversation. We talk about having this race conversation. We never actually have it. You know, the conversation I would like to see the country have on this is I want to see Eric Holder and Jeff Sessions lay it all out there. And I say this because I actually think it could be cathartic. Like, just if they would do it in both ways, you know, let it all out. But in some ways, the two of them would be emblematic of this polarization that is out there, view that it's a polarized conversation.
So I don't think
that would ever happen.
I don't think it would ever happen. I agree with Eric, but I want to take a bit of an issue with what Alonzo said, and particularly on criminal justice reform, because that is actually an issue where you have a bipartisan level of agreement and a lot of data, okay, data that doesn't lie in terms of the effects that certain communities in this country, most notably African Americans, have suffered based on the way the criminal justice system was set up. But no, but let me finish. And I think that there are a lot of people who look at the penalties for crack cocaine versus powder cocaine back there in those crime bills. There are a lot of people who look at the actual effect of this over the years. And this was a bipartisan effort that was launched under the Obama administration that the Koch brothers were very involved in. And so let me finish, okay? And so I think that is actually not the right issue. I think that President Obama would be the first to say that he wished that he had been able to, you know, address the polarization to bring people together better. But I don't think I would go to criminal justice reform as the issue I would use to illustrate your point here.
But the problem is that when you have the press in the United States or other Democratic presidential candidates saying that there's institutionalized discrimination, it's institutionalized in our criminal system, the message that you're sending is that the police is racist. And some people, sadly, believe that. So I think it requires a conversation between both sides. And I think we can't be naive. I mean, there are people on both sides trying to use race for political reasons, sadly.
But I think that the both sides language, which, of course, President Trump made very notorious, is not really the correct language here. Okay? I think that, in particular, that when you look at what the current president has done to actually, you know, to really use divisive language to try to equate people who were, you know, wearing swastikas with people who were peacefully protesting in Charlottesville, that the both sides language has become code for something that's really damaging.
I'm not going to defend the language from President Trump. I mean, he said that there were, you know, peaceful people at the white supremacist rally. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Right.
But there are elements in the left. I mean, let's talk about Antifa groups that are, you know, Berkeley. I mean, look what's happening in Berkeley. I mean, when you see a conservative speaker and all of a sudden you have all these groups, you know, using violence, and now this is the problem.
This is the problem.
We've conflated it into our polarization, where this race issue is separate.
Right.
Distinct.
And, you know, one thing that's so discouraging about the numbers in your poll is it was just 8.5 years ago when more than 2/3 of Americans thought race relations were
improving.
Good.
Well, they thought the election of the first black president was going to improve race relations automatically.
We did a USA Today poll right after his election directed on race, and what we found were both blacks and whites were optimistic, but blacks were optimistic because they thought there would finally be a debate about racial injustice,
right.
And whites were optimistic because they thought President Obama's election meant that race relations were good.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, we didn't. It goes back to, we never have this conversation. I mean, the fact is, I think there are plenty of people that do not understand what it's like to be pulled over for the color of your skin, right? And that is a conversation that we don't really have that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Or to be worried about your kid just walking home from school or going to a convenience store to pick up a candy bar. Right?
At the same time, I get that law enforcement officials every day feel as if they're on eggshells. So we are in a bad place.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're in a bad place, but we're, in a way, we're in a bad place because people are recognizing the various problems we have. I mean, this is an increasingly diverse society. In many ways, my kids' attitudes about race are so much stronger than mine.
You can make an argument that all of this negative attention actually is probably what is necessary to surface it. You can't solve it if you don't surface it, and we've been sweeping it.
But you require presidential leadership.
It does,
yes.
And I don't know. And he's got to figure out how to get into this game. All right, guys. Thank you.
There it is. You have it. MSNBC, Chuck Todd, and some panelists discussing that 70% of Americans have a negative view on race relations here in America. Miss Bianca, so glad that you're on the program today, assisting in our conversation and talking with us. Do you think that race relations are bad here in America today?
Yeah, I think it's like 50-50. And I say that because obviously there are definitely still racial issues and racial problems, but then there's also a lot of younger people, even a lot of veterans, a lot of older European people who have become enlightened and who are looking at things from a different view now.
Mm-hmm. Different lens.
Yeah. So while there is still that lingering racism issue, I do think that there's still people who are willing and open to the idea of change,
mm-hmm.
especially in the younger generation.
Yeah.
But there is still some people who, it all varies on how you were raised, who have those
mm-hmm.
ideals.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is an issue that's been just permanent throughout the generations and the society. It seems like was born in the 50s, raised in the 50s, and also a teenager in the 60s, and it just seems like it's a never-ending story. Even this poll here, just 25% of those surveys say that they approve of President Donald Trump's handling of race relations generally, including just 50% of Republicans and 23% of independents and 5% of Democrats. They're asking specifically about Trump's handling of the violence in Charlottesville. Just 22% of respondents say they approve of the president's response, in which he placed blame that is many side to the unrest. And that approval dropped just 3% among African Americans. I think that younger people today see things a little differently. But, you know, when you grow up systemically in a society where white supremacy has become part of the infrastructure, you have to ask yourself some questions. When I personally go into a shopping facility, and the first question I ask, do I see anybody in there that works there that looks like me? If I don't see that, then the second question I ask is there any person of color in that system, any person of color? If I don't see that, then I say, do I spend my dollars there? Because it seems like it's business as usual, and I have to make a choice. And I think that, just removing of monuments and symbolism and things, you have to watch it, because I think we get history and heritage too many times mixed up with hatred. And there's a lot of hatred out here, and there are, as was talked about in the poll, a lot of people profit off of this here, and they like to see the division among us. It's in the workplace when there is a difference. When African Americans are pulled over versus non-African Americans, or person people of color, it's just a difference. And if you've really been cut by the sword of racism, it's something that you just don't easily get over. Do you have any insight on some of the things I just said?
I do understand how it could be something that's hard to get over. And definitely people from your generation and still my generation have grown up in a white supremacy system. But I do also look at places like the work world and, for example, at my new job, their push for diversity and inclusion. That's one of their big initiatives. And to me, it's enlightening to see in the time when Trump is doing all these types of things and not advocating for inclusiveness or diversity or trying to take a stand against white supremacy, that it is that there are people who find it important to dismantle that. Even in sports, as we were talking about earlier, you see that with the owners of certain NFL and NBA teams taking a stand. I mean, it took a while. But so I do think that even though it's been engraved in many people's heads, I do think there are people, that just still goes to my point, that there are people who are open-minded to change.
Yeah, well, what about, I'm going to throw you a curveball now, what in the instance where now you see it's starting to catch on as wildfire of a lot of the sports athletes who are refusing to pledge allegiance to the flag. They're bowing the knee because this is a call for a conversation that seems to not take place. And this young athlete who started it all, I think he made lots of sacrifices to get that position out there more, and people are starting to understand and see that, hey, something must be here. Something is there. Do we give allegiance to a flag that is not, that's doing more profession and not practicing the things that are so important? And what's your thoughts on that?
Obviously, I think it was wrong how they treated Colin Kaepernick. But somebody has to be an example. Somebody has to lead the way, and he basically did that. I think that the way that they're choosing to protest, that that's their way they want to do it. I think that it's a great symbolism, especially because so many millions of people watch the NFL and the NBA and stuff like that. Even I've seen across the news, there's been young students in high school taking these. And I think it's a great thing. But I also, on the contrary, I wish the African Americans who were already in the league would have sacrificed that a long time ago and stood behind him last year when this was going on. And maybe he wouldn't have gotten fired and not been in the NFL anymore. You know?
I believe a conversation is so important. You know, we realize that there is mass polarization. It's just, it exists. It's there. The separation of races. I say so many times, professionally we're integrated, but socially we're segregated. In regard, it makes no difference where you're at. It may not be racism in your country. Maybe you're in a country and it may be tribalism. It may be your ethnicity against another ethnic. There's your ethnic cleansing that goes on that's happened even in Europe between the Kurds and so forth. So it's just different forms that it's taken on. And I think the way we deal with that is to try to work against the alienation, because all it does is amount to just plain out intimidation, to be intimidated because of a person's feeling of superiority, that they're better than you. You don't quite measure up to them. They don't like you because they feel you have a broad nose or thick lips or kinky hair. To me, all those are beautiful features. And if you know, we're human beings. When we come out of our mother's womb, we don't come out with any persuasion. We come out a particular identity. And we have to accept that. We have to embrace that. And then we start, as we develop, we start adding on to our makeup different perspectives that shape our worldview and according to what you've been exposed to. To me, it was a shame that young Dylan Roof went into that church in Charleston, South Carolina, and did what he did. And I said way back then that it was just the tip of the iceberg, and it is. And until we willing to roll up our sleeves and to address the fact that we all have been affected and afflicted with this disease, and we must work together for more peace and just society. Blessed are the peacemakers, is what our Lord and Savior said. We have to strive toward that. Hatred seems to be the order of the day. And when I hate you because of the way you look or the way you think or because you express yourself and we can't openly have a dialogue, that is problematic. And I'm a strong advocate of love, acceptance, and forgiveness. But I think we have to attack the very core of the establishment of our society to be able to make a difference. And I don't think we can just work around that. I think we have to address that heads up. What do you think?
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely agree.
So, I don't know. It's just, I'm just glad to have a platform, and I want to challenge our listeners, wherever you are. If you're in London, if you're in one of the countries in Africa, if you're in the Caribbean, West Indies, here in the United States, whatever platform you have, make a platform your goal to be inclusive. An inclusive platform is one that respects people and gives people the opportunity to be accepted into the universal brotherhood of mankind. We're not going to always agree alike. We're not going to always look alike, but we become peacemakers. And it should not take, this is something that I'm very strongly concerned about. Why is it? Because it should not take a national catastrophe or disaster for us to find out we can work together. You know, when we had back-to-back hurricanes, Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma, you saw people just rolling up their sleeves, coming together to work together. And if we can do that in the time of crisis, you saw stars, that's right, stars, black, white, different other nationalities coming together where you could call in and raise money to make a difference. This should be the norm. This should be the standard that we should strive to work together. And shame on any of us that is more caught up in being an exclusive or supremacist in our perspective that we don't give a damn. That is just plain out wrong. And I think when we think of the legacy of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King and others, pioneers and forefathers who have worked hard to make a difference, we ought to be willing to do our fair share. You can't do your fair share if you don't step up. Too many times we're part of that silent generation, and it should be like that. We should be willing to be advocates for change, and that's a good change. And it's just going to take us having a different attitude. This is why sometimes people, they do, as you mentioned earlier, you know, you took on another employment because this is just a part-time situation here with you as our co-host. But, you know, if you are looked upon and recognized for the talents you have and who you are and the gifts you bring and being properly compensated for that, you wouldn't have to look for anywhere else. Got about 60 seconds. What would you say to that, Ms. Bianca, in closing?
I think that it's really important, like you said, to focus on inclusiveness, to focus on just trying to be as cohesive as we can and bringing people together as much as possible. I think that that's the most important thing that we can do, wanting to accept others for their differences no matter what they have going on with them, color, skin, background, anything.
That's right. That's so wonderful because we rob ourselves of the wonder of diversity when we take those lopsided perspectives. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King said, "Don't judge me by the color of my skin, but by the content." The content, I like that, of my character. That's what it's all about. Well, this has been Stan Macklin and Bianca Forbes with you today. And I think that last we opened up with Michael Jackson, he said it's not black or white. You got to learn how to get together, get along. So you make a perspective to do that. And remember, it's not the outlook, it's the uplook that makes the difference. Have a good day. And remember that change is coming.